Oh, baby, we are here. We are ready. We are live over there at the True North Fantasy Football Twitter account, YouTube. We are at the live at the Full Tilt Dynasty Podcast YouTube page that you should all be subscribed to. This is the Full Tilt Dynasty Podcast, Season 2, Episode 20. We are continuing the ambiguous wide receiver conversation. We got a little bit of draft strategy conversation, seeing as how I've roped Jacob into another startup thanks to me and Du Bois, Kevin's previous rivalry. He decided to jump in there and get him a piece. It's just been a mean factory. That's absolutely phenomenal content here in late June. Reminder, next week we do have Pat Dougherty of NBC Sports Edge. He's coming and joining us. And then just booked July 12th, Drew of the Bulletproof Discord will be joining us for his second appearance here on the Full Tilt Dynasty Podcast. Can't wait to talk Gabe Davis with that.
Only Gabe Davis. Gabe and only Gabe.
I can't wait. It's just going to be an absolute content factory. And of course, Billy not being here today leaves the door open for up and coming Full Tilt superstar and quickly becoming my right hand man in this whole operation. We will meet him in just a second. Reminder that I am the host with the most time in his hands. I control all the buttons. You can find me over there at Thomas Tipple FF over there on the Bird app and everywhere else. And my fun fact of the day is the last time I saw Jacob do a show from his office, they tried to lock him in the building.
Yeah, my name is Jacob Sanderson, FF underscore RTDB. My fun fact is that, as you can see, I'm doing it from the office and I did not bring a change of clothes today. So I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to do the full show in my suit here because we have an RTD B V the people today, right? So that means I've got to have my lawyer clothes on. I have to have my lawyer office. I got to give the people. The other fun fact, it's actually not a fun fact, is that there's a guy in our office who's broken three chairs by leaning on them with his elbows. And as the newest member of the office, that means I get one of his broken chairs, which means that every time you hear this sound, sure, now it won't break, but whatever. You'll hear that a few times. That's because my chair just breaks in the middle of the middle of whatever I'm trying to say.
We got Ferris in here today already.
Ferris, the commish of the startup that we're currently doing, where I'm staring down the double barrel of a Zeke Monty round eight.
Absolute meme factory. And of course, as I mentioned, third chair today. Go ahead.
Hey, my name is Lucas Gilbert. You can find me on Twitter at The Cute Hurts. And my fun fact of the day is today is actually the first day of summer, and I cannot stand it if it keeps getting hotter. But it is nice and cold here in my game room, so I'm excited. I'm ready.
Ready for all these cold takes on a hot day. Look, big look, every show says that there's a ton to get to, and we're going to try to cram as much as we can into this hour on top of an absolutely ridiculous argument that I'm going to try to make and get completely blown out of the water, but that's okay. Jacob, I wanted to kick the show off. We were talking a little bit about strategy today, and I think this will lead into our ambiguous wide receiver conversations pretty well. First off, because let's just face it, fuck the news. Like, we get it. Everyone's in great shape. People have asthma. Zeke looks great.
Everyone is in the best shape of their life except for Treylon Burks. He's in no shape at all.
Asthma's really murking the premier athlete, which makes me feel less bad about my not premier athlete body as a retired pro wrestler. But, Jacob, drafts right now feel a little weird. We are in two drafts together right now as it stands, and two they could not be more polar opposites, where in the one draft with the aforementioned Ferris, quarterbacks went like hotcakes, leading to a hilarious Mac Jones incident for yourself, which we are definitely going to talk about. We are not going to skip over that fact at all. And the other one where quarterbacks seem to kind of taken a back seat after the first, say, six. I feel like right now in drafts, the trade down is not as beneficial as it used to be. You talked about a scenario where, though, you were able to use it to your, I guess, kind of an advantage to secure the assets, not only that you wanted, but get one of those sweet, sweet 23 ones. Walk us through that process and why you went that way.
Well, I think that you know, people have finally figured out, right, that trading down is usually good in startups. So I think that gone are the days from 3-4 years ago. In most cases, I shouldn't say gone are the days, because every room you're in is different and every room has different players. But I think in a lot of drafts that I'm in these days, you know, I'm no longer able to walk into the room, say, okay, my first rounder is on the table, and all of a sudden, like, there's a flood of five people that are, you know, climbing all over each other to try and trade. I'll give you my second and my fourth and my 10th and next year's first. And like, people used to trade all sorts of crazy things, right?
Used to be me.
And I think what people are now at least a little bit more creative about in their trade ups is they'll try to make it like a 2-for-2 type of scenario. I mean, in general, like, I'm always going to be wanting to trade down in the most obvious sense, where it's like, you know, it's the fifth. I'll trade the 5-3 for 5-9 and a 12th, right? It's like, I might still get the player that I was going to take at 5-3 anyway. And then you're giving me a free pick on top later. Great. You know, chances are I might just be getting something completely for free. Right. And that's what you always want to try and do with the trade down, is understand, okay, everybody else has different rankings than you do. So your best available player is probably not the guy next to you. But I do think it's different, you know, in the first, like,
yeah,
for the most part. I mean, maybe we'll talk on some that have gone a little bit differently, but I would say the vast majority of the startups that I've done this offseason lately have pretty much followed the same pattern for the first round, which is, it, you know, you start off this run of quarterback in some order. We usually see Mahomes, Allen, and Herbert as the first three, usually followed roughly by Kyler, Lamar, and Burrow in some order. And then we usually see again in some order Jefferson, Chase, and Pitts and Taylor, and maybe some of those seep in ahead of the quarterbacks. That's usually how we've seen it go. And the turn, usually we get some Dak in there. And then Depending, sometimes it's Lance, sometimes it's Lawrence, sometimes it's Hurts, whatever. We start to see those guys. Russ, yeah. But that's generally how the first rounds have gone, right? And so you're not getting that kind of advantage if you're moving, you know, from the first back to the second. Like, you know, if you move from the 1-7 to the 2-6, your guy won't still be there, right? Like, he's not still going to be there. But I think it's understanding, like, how much are we actually getting? And try to think about it in terms of an actual trade, right? How much would Josh Allen or Mahomes cost in the trade market? How much would Kyle Pitts cost in the trade market? Would you be willing to pay that cost? You know, I'm usually still pretty okay with trading out of the first round. But for instance, we're in the startup right now where I actually traded up into the first round. I had the 103 and I took Herbert there. And then I got to a spot where I thought I got a pretty affordable trade up with our friend Anthony, where I had the 210, the 3-3, and the 6-10. And so I moved my 2-3 and 6 to get the 110, the 4-3, and the 10-3. And the way I looked at it there is, I was like, I might have a pretty similar tier player from 3-3 to 4-3. It turns out I got probably the exact same player I would have taken at 3-3. And then, you know, I'm basically sacrificing my 6-10 to 10-3 to go up and get Kyle Pitts, who I see as one of those clear difference makers, you know, versus the 2-10. I probably would have been taking the guy that we're going to talk about later in the show, AJ Brown. Who I think is a really, really good player, but to me is not in that upper echelon of guys that are almost irreplaceable to me.
Right. And Jamie just mentioned he got Mahomes at 106. That's pretty egregious, considering Joe Burrow in this other dynasty that we are in went at 1-5 before Lamar Jackson and after Kyler Murray, Geesh. But yeah, just unreal. And speaking of moving back to the second round, not as advantageous. I've done this in recent drafts, the last two actually. I was at 105 where Joe Burrow got taken, and I got the 2-5 and the 3-6, and I had to give up my 8th, I believe, in that draft. And I walked away with Mark Andrews and Debo with first down bonuses for rushing and receiving, and it's tight end premium. I'm happy with that deal. Joe Burrow for Debo and Mark Andrews. I'm happy. I just want to point out that I am fucking vindicated, Ferris. Carr just went at 4-5 in that draft that Jacob and I are talking about.
Funny for Carr, bro. We're all aboard your Carr pick. It was the one right after that.
Not true. You used plural when you said, I believe it was Jamokes. But hey, Tua, I'm telling you, he's the truth this year. He can't not be. And that's another thing I wanted to talk about. Waddle's ADP, still pretty high. Tyreek Hill's ADP, pretty freaking high.
Too high.
Mike Gesicki being drafted with the potential of being a top 12 guy. Chase Edmonds being drafted as a premier, dead zone running back with real high upside. Sure, awesome. if everyone else's ADP is that high, something's got to go right for Tua. So, look, I'm just rolling in with Tua right now. Maybe there was a similar schemed
quarterback who was able to produce last year's wide receiver 3 overall and the top 5 tight end in points per game and a top 12 running back in points per game, and yet didn't really score any fantasy points. It's interesting. You know, same scheme, same right. Mike McDaniel. Garoppolo. I think it's a good, that's a good comparison.
No, that's fair. And look, hey, I get it. I totally get it. But I had a prediction, and that was that quarterbacks were going to semi-fly off the board. And you said, I should be thanking you for inciting a QB panic. And maybe that's what happened. Maybe it wasn't. Who's to say? But Ferris also said, in letting Mixon plus Kittle fall to me, I would be more impressed that you landed over the hill Joe Mixon, who just had his best season that I'll ever have, and Kittle, who you will need to receive points per blocking attempt for him to be fantasy viable and reaching for those guys. So good for you. I'm happy for you. I'm glad, Ferris. But hey, enough of this in our league conversation. But I think you're right. I think people are just getting smarter in the trade back. I have found it to be much more difficult than it used to be. Lucas, I know you've drafted in leagues with me before where, as Jacob mentioned, you used to get a 2, a 5, and like a second round pick just to move back into the second round. Well, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, I think a big part of this trade back issue is that the picks just aren't the same. Like, yes. I think that the first round is better than it's been recently and deeper, and the second round is worse. I think that the difference between round 1 and round 2 in startups is about as stark as it's ever been. Like I remember earlier, like a couple of years ago, before we knew what Kyler Murray was, before we knew what Josh Allen was, before Justin Herbert had even played a game, before Joe Burrow had even played a game, right? Like the quarterbacks that we were taking was basically just Mahomes and then Lamar, and even Lamar is a fairly new phenomenon. Like it was really a tier of 2. And after that, I mean, it was kind of a bit of a crapshoot as to who the next quarterbacks were, yep, because you're starting to get into these older guys, like we're seeing, Russ, or I guess Deshaun Watson was obviously in that mix, and I guess I blocked him out. But point is, we had this sort of a much shorter tier of elite quarterbacks, right, than we do right now, where it extends pretty clearly to 6, and then we have the wide receivers now that are young. Like we haven't had a wide receiver at the age of Jefferson and Chase that profiles like they do in a while.
Long time.
Like we had out of 2019, it was like, Brown, Metcalf looked great. Not this level, right? Out of 2018, it was like Ridley, DJ Moore. Okay. Not this level. I'm trying to think of who the best guys even in the 2017 class were. I can't off the top of my head. I think 2016 was terrible for wide receiver. Like it's really been since 2014 when we had Odell come on the scene and immediately dominate. And then, obviously Devontae didn't dominate right away. Watkins actually, probably held a ton of value after his rookie season and second season correctly, and then injuries derailed his career. But we don't have, that type of scenario right now, or we haven't the last couple of years, with that elite end of the wide receiver. But we have them. We have Taylor. Pitts is a new phenomenon that we've almost never seen, a tight end. And we'll see if that manifests. But I think that elite solidification of the first round, and then the second round being, guys like, okay, how expensively do we want to draft Russ and Stafford at 33, 34 years old? How confident are we in Hurts and Lance and Lawrence to pay, that high of a price? So I think it's like, to me, I don't really want to ever pick in the second round. Yeah, Ferris is bringing this up right now. That's exactly I want to be picking in the fourth round, because to me, it's like, we're going to talk about AJ Brown later. And to me, he is my wide receiver 3, but he's not that far ahead of wide receiver 15. Like I was probably considering AJ Brown potentially at the 2-3 in this draft. I was happy to end up trading back a couple times to the 3-11. I got Devontae Adams. I would still rank them in the same tier because, to me, I would rather take whoever the draft deems least desirable of everyone in the 2-3 in the early 4. I don't think that the guys like Javonte, Breece, AJ Brown, CeeDee Lamb, who tend to go at the top of that tier, are that much more valuable than the guys that I get the early fourth, be it Devontae or Deontay or DJ Moore or Saquon Barkley. I don't think it's that big of a gap. So to me, it's like the round one is up here. And then because the next tier is so elongated, it makes it harder to trade back and feel like you're getting that much value. Because to me, like, you almost don't want to trade back first to second. You're giving up more value in the actual players right. than you're yep. getting in terms of the draft picks.
Well, let's talk about that. Lucas, I was going to ask you a question, but we moved right on here and I want to hit on this. I think this is why I think three times I've drafted a running back now in back-to-back-to-back drafts in the second round, that being Javonte Williams mm-hmm. right in the middle at 2-6, 2-7. This is the first time I've drafted a running back that high in 5, 6, 7 startups now. Just solely because it feels like the wide receiver, it used to be a smash. Used to know exactly what you wanted to do with the wide receiver position. Debo last year, there were people that believed in Cooper Kupp to be the wide receiver one. That was this guy on this show. I'm going to keep fucking saying it, and I will pull receipts for those who need it. But, you know, DJ Moore would go in the third round. Metcalf was a second-round pick, no-brainer. AJ Brown was a 2-1 pick. Devontae Adams was still on Green Bay, absolutely smashing it. CeeDee Lamb hadn't disappointed again, right? There were so many receivers you could just walk in and keep moving back, and you get two, maybe three of them, two in the second round, and you could hop one bonus one in the third round, no problem. Right now, though, well, Adams is now with the aforementioned Carr. Mm-hmm. We don't know what he's going to do. CeeDee Lamb disappointed a second time. AJ Brown's with Philly. We're going to talk about him and why that
goes from Mahomes to Tua.
Yeah. Hey.
Well, you
hey.
Love Tua. He ain't Mahomes.
Not according to Tyreek Hill, he ain't. So there you go. Right. But the wide receiver, and now Cooper Kupp has moved up. Sure. That's great. But yeah. It used to be, you would
he's
see
29. Like, it's right. not. Yeah.
And so, and now you're getting maybe questionable wide receivers from the rookie class, which we haven't had the last 2 years. So now we got guys like London, even T. Higgins falling. And now you're seeing a few more running backs move back up again. Yeah. I'm more comfortable taking a guy like Javonte Williams, knowing that, like you said, the gap wide receivers isn't as high. In this draft specifically, since we're here to talk about it, and we got some viewers from that draft, I'm just going to go back to it again. Javonte Williams at 2-7, and then I ended up getting two of the wide receivers I wanted anyway, and CeeDee Lamb at 3-10 and at 2-10, and Deontay Johnson at 3-10. And even DJ Moore sitting there at 4-3. That's why you can reach for that young stud running back, or potential stud running back, if you would, in that second round right now. The trends in the wide receivers being a little bit scary, I think, isn't going away for the rest of this offseason. And I think some real important things need to shake out before the wide receivers. Like, Devontae Adams has to be a smash hit in Vegas for him to retain ADP.
Yeah, but he can't. But he, like, that's the problem, right? That's the issue with wide receivers. The true studs right now, like, are Adams, Hill, Diggs, Kupp. Though, other than Jefferson, like Jefferson, Chase, but the next three other first round redraft wide receivers are Adams, Kupp, and Diggs. And then Hill, of course, is sort of in that mix in round two. Mike Evans is in that mix in round two. All these guys are old. So, yeah, like, their value isn't going up. They can maybe retain if they perform elite. They could somewhat come close to retain. Their value isn't going up. And we'll see. It's an issue that this 22 class, you know, isn't what it is. Because every other rookie class, you'd at least have a few guys who would pop right up. This is going to shift next year when we get the 23 guys in there. And we get, you know, we'll probably find out more about Lance and Hurts and Lawrence and Fields this year. We'll separate which ones are plummeting down the boards and which couple are now top seven startup picks. And then, you know, we're going to find out, I think, more about Javonte and Breece and Swift and Kenneth Walker and all these running backs coming off injury. It'll be interesting. I think that we'll see a flatter first few rounds again come 2023, especially with that injection of talent. But right now it's very, very bimodal at the top.
I feel like we need four wide receivers. Lucas?
See, what I'm doing right now is I understand that the first round is chock full of talent. And what we're buying there, like JJ said on your all show, 2 weeks ago, people are paying up because they want to know what their quarterbacks are going to do for them every week. And for me, I'm okay taking that flux in scoring each week at quarterback position, knowing that I can just stockpile in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round on all of these talented players who keep falling. Like, you all keep mentioning some of the veterans who keep going up, like your Adams, your Cup, your Hill.
And even Diggs.
And Diggs. I mean, there's so many people who are going at the end of the second round. And also people, I feel like, aren't, like, they have no idea what to do with the running back position. Jacob, you've mentioned several times, after Jonathan Taylor, it's gross. There's no clear-cut RB2 in this class.
Oh, my gosh.
No this year. And I'm just going to sit back, and I'm like, okay, I'll take the risk with Travis Etienne. That's perfectly fine. A.J. Dillon, yeah, we'll take him. Even Tony Pollard coming in at the eighth round, fine. I'll take that all day, absolutely easy. And I'm going to play a guessing game with the wide receivers because there's so many. Yes, it's flat throughout probably your fourth through seventh round. I think it's fairly flat. So I'm just going to take as many stabs as I can and just keep trading down. And I think I've picked once in the second round this whole offseason because the talent and the value isn't there. I'll just keep taking guesses later on.
I believe it was Pat Corain that said that.
Ever been.
I believe it was Pat Corain that said that the dead zone starts at 101 on a good football show with next week's guest, Pat Daugherty, mind you. Keep that in mind. And you're right. A running back does feel weird, but I'm noticing, Steve, even in this draft, you get Taylor that went at 110, and then you had more running backs go in the second round than you had receivers. And in the first two rounds, there was more running backs overall than there were receivers drafted. If you really look at that, it was Chase, Jefferson, Lamb, Cup, and you had Taylor, Swift, Harris, Javonte, McCaffrey, and Breece Hall all go. So it's like a weird shift right now that feels like a little grimy, but it just feels weird right now. And part of that is a lot of work being done about ambiguous wide receiver rooms, how to spot like winners between rounds 4 and 6, avoiding the dead zone, get your guys earlier. Also, shout out Andy. I hope you're recovering well, man. I remember talking to you, I think it was a day or two ago. You said you were recovering well. You're finally back at the desk. So good for you, man. Appreciate the comment. Ferris, Jacob, don't you start yawning because you're going to make me yawn. And it's earlier where you are, so don't start that. It's very viable to trade out of the first and go into a win now type of build. Lots of value for sure. And as that's Ferris again, who did mention that he picked up Mixon and Kittle late because old guys are smelly and they're gross. But there's definitely like you can do that now without giving up your first round picks, which I think is really huge and really important.
I just think if you're going to trade out of the first, just don't put a lot of the roster value in the second. I think if you're trading out of the first, to me, I think I would either target a bunch of picks in the fourth and fifth, or I'd be getting a 23 first as a part of the package.
Absolutely correct. Look, I want to take a quick second. We're going to take a step away. When we come back, we're going to start hammering home even more of these wide receivers because this is huge. There are guys like Marquise Brown that I want to talk about. Guys like Rashad Bateman. Where's Mike Evans sitting? Gronk retired. Actually, I can't believe I missed that in the news. Well, as Jacob might think, fake retired. He'll believe it when he sees it.
I will believe it when I see it. Yeah,
it's going to be a week 15 return for Gronk. His John Cena-like music is going to hit. He's going to run on the field, drop a couple Gronk spikes. But we're going to take a quick second. We're going to play a clip from the Full Tilt Devi podcast, forgetting the name of my own shows here. And when we come back, we're going to hit more of this ambiguous wide receiver stuff. So sit tight, stay tuned, and enjoy the clip. Tight ends in college football are a nightmare scenario. Yeah. But in this offense and what I think they can do, I think that Ferguson is a player that I am 100% going to be watching to see if he can make, if he makes any sort of leap in college football in his sophomore season at his size. All right, now the bells are going up. Now I'm interested. So he's a player on that team I'm watching for. I like him a lot. Yeah, that's freshman tight end Ferguson from Oregon, absolute giants. I believe he's 6'6". He's over 250 pounds. Absolute freak. Had a very good freshman year. This Thursday, we have another Full Tilt Devi podcast. And gentlemen, again, Ferris is just smashing the comment section. We love it. It's very viable to trade out of the first round. We cut that one. I've seen someone start Cup plus CMC by trading back, and then he scooped Kelsey and Adams in the third. That's an absolutely insane build. If you're a good enough manager to do it, and get out of that scenario. I absolutely love that. There are people that do that, and then that team ends up being an orphan really quickly.
I think one of my favorite things that I've done a couple times in that is viable right now is you can build, I call it the conveyor belt build, but you can basically trade back a ton and then take like all vets, but try to add a couple extra firsts in, like, especially 2024. People treat 2023s very carefully, but people are a lot more willing to build, to move 2024 first.
Yep.
And so one of my dream starts right now is if you could like trade back a ton, pick up like three extra 2024 firsts, then basically just play for a 2-year window, and then the wheels are going to fall off, and then try to restock the cupboards in 2024. Because, I mean, if you think about the way redraft is going right now, you could take the consensus 1-0. Let's see. Well, Kopp goes round 2 and McCaffrey goes round 2. Those are two top 5 picks. You could take the consensus 106 and Austin Eckler often in round 3. I got him in round 4. You can take Henry usually in round 4 or 5. That's a consensus 107, right? Diggs is usually available in the third. He's a first rounder. Adams the same. He's a first rounder. Even going to the second round, you have guys like Leonard Fournette, Aaron Jones, Mike Evans, who are all consensus second round redraft picks who all tend to go in round 7-ish right now in dynasty startups. So you can build an absolute monster team out of the second and third rounds and the sixth and seventh rounds that has like 5 or 6 top 24 redraft teams on it and add extra firsts along the way. I think it's an interesting way to go where like I built a team in one league this year where I took a solid amount of vets, and I think I took like Lenny and Connor as my running backs, and I took Kelsey at tight end, but then I added firsts, right? So I think that's one way to have it both ways.
Very, yeah, I love that. I've been saying on the walkabout that in every trade negotiation, you should try to fit in some form of 24 pick, whether you try to fit a free second in there that some might get willy-nilly, or if you're feeling real froggy, you leap on the 24 first. Jacob, I feel like this is a question.
A question
being brought forth by Jamie to you. So I'm going to get your opinion. What's your thoughts on Khalil Herbert? I just drafted him at the 14:07. We love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. Round like 12 through 20, I mean, you're just taking backup running backs. So pick your favorite. Herbert is definitely one of my favorites. I thought he had some really fun underlying metrics. PFF graded him out really well. In terms of a lot of his like forced missed tackles, evasion, yards after contact, he was generally grading out better than Montgomery, even when you rate that per blocking. I know with the work that Noah Hills, former podcast guest, does on his relative success rate, relative efficiency metrics, he was generally outproducing Montgomery in that area too. So I'm interested in Herbert, and he has that dual upside where I think his worst case scenario is he's a handcuff to Montgomery. The best case scenario is it's a brand new coaching staff. So, you know, we don't know necessarily if it's going to be Montgomery getting 90% of the touches or if it's going to be more of a timeshare, you know, or if Herbert could eventually steal the job later in the year or in another year. He's one of my favorites. Him and Darrell Henderson are probably my two favorite guys in that range to target, and Ramondre Stevenson.
And Montgomery's contract runs out after this year. So it makes Herbert somebody who – things have to go catastrophically wrong for him to lose value this year.
Correct.
And that's something I've been doing in my drafts, and I might be too much of a disciple of only drafting people who can get value or whose value can only go up, because it has made some pretty interesting, I'll just say that, teams to where my oldest player is DJ Moore, and that seems very wrong.
You're more of an ageist than Jacob is.
Yeah, but y'all need to stop saying all this stuff about 23 first. It hasn't got to my leagues yet because I'm scooping them up like candy right now. I have one league where I have 4 23 first, and I still have a team that can compete this year. And then I have another one where I have a 3 23 first and a 24 first. And I'm just raking it in because everybody was moving up or dying to move up to in front of my picks because they wanted the Derrick Henry's, thinking that they are going to have a chance to compete, or they're trying to move up for their third quarterback already in the fourth round of a startup. I'm like, fine, take them. I'm going to get the guys whose value is actually going to go up heading into next year. Like,
right.
If I lose out on ETN, fine, but I see the potential for his value to go way up to where he's going to be going where Swift is currently, more so than where Khalil Herbert's going to be going next year. So,
I think that's also important to note is that as much as we are in our circles, right, we're kind of in our bag, if you would, not every league is going to operate the same. You don't have all the same players and all the same leagues, which is why it's important to be very open about your, I guess, potential strategy. This is why getting in that league from the Bulletproof, like that was, I had no idea what to expect because I've never been in the league with players that, you know, kind of have all have access to the same thing. And it wasn't what I was expecting. And then there's some other randos that I'm in now with from the Bird app. It's important to remember that people get their information from different sources. They converse with different people. They don't spend, not everyone spends every waking moment of their life looking at, as Jacob would say, the spreadsheet virgins doing their things on the daily basis. Like that's not a reality for everyone. So I think that's very, I think what Lucas touched on was a very important notion. Jacob, I want to talk about ambiguous wide receivers because there are a lot of them. There are a lot of teams right now with a lot of questions. And I just want to know, with all the great work JJ's been doing, the work you've been doing, Scott Barrett's been on it pretty heavily. In your last couple of weeks, is there a team that stands out as, I don't want to say like the most targeted team of yours, but one that kind of maybe stands out the most, because there's one for me. So I was just very interested to hear what you had to say.
There's a clear one for me, for sure.
Same one.
And I think I briefly touched on it last week, but we didn't get fully into it, and it's the New York Jets.
Right. For me. We have different ones.
Yeah, it's the New York Jets for me is the one that I'm all over. I'm going to pull up my underdog exposure right now. Shout out Underdog. Use promo code FULLTILT when you sign up and check out considerations.
Well done. I'm just
shoehorning in these ad reads. But okay, here's my Jets exposure. It's unreasonable. This is since they launched Best Ball Mania. So this is only including Best Ball Mania and the puppy. But I have 32% Garrett Wilson, 21% Breece Hall, 18% Zach Wilson, 13% Elijah Moore, and 13% Corey Davis. For whatever it's worth, neutral exposure is 8%. So literally every single member of the offense, except for their tight ends, which usually don't get drafted. And then Michael Carter, I have 0 because he's a backup. But all of their three starting wide receivers, and Hall and Wilson, I'm either almost 2x the field, almost 3x the field, or literally 4x the field on. And the reason why is it's like, I don't know what's going to happen necessarily in the modal outcome, but these guys are priced. My tweet the other day was that they're priced as if their quarterback is worse than Drew Lock. And I mean that literally. Like, I'm not saying that as in like just a joke. Look at Seattle's weapons. DK Metcalf is going at the end of the fourth. Tyler Lockett's going at the end of the eighth. Noah Fant is going in the 14th. Elijah Moore is going at the end of the sixth. Garrett Wilson is going in the beginning of the 10th. Corey Davis is going in the 14th. Both teams have basically just three pieces that are being drafted. I think they have project to have somewhat similar target distributions between their lead three players. I don't know that either will throw to running backs at a considerably higher rate than the other. Zach Wilson at least didn't show any proclivity that all those target running backs were with Mike White. So why in the world are the Jets wide receivers being drafted so much lower than even the other wide receivers in these bad offenses? It doesn't make any sense to me. Elijah Moore had everything we want to see from a rookie season. He was up over 24% targets per route, flashed a ton. He won as an outside wide receiver, which was the biggest question mark about him coming in.
Yep.
You know, he's a guy that has the exact second year profile that we should be trying to target. I'm not particularly sure, to be honest, why his ADP isn't the same place that Jalen Waddle's ADP is, who's competing with a much more established wide receiver in Tyreek Hill. And in my view, he showed pretty similar per route stats. It's just he didn't run as many routes because he got hurt and he didn't start off as a full-time player. Then you add in Garrett Wilson, who prior to the draft, most people in NFL circles at least had him either wide receiver 1 or wide receiver 2. In fantasy circles, maybe down to wide receiver 3. I did not see a lot of lists with him outside of the top 3 on it.
Correct.
Then he goes top 10. Unlike Chris Olave and Sky Moore, and even Drake London. You know, I think he goes to the most ambiguous depth chart of all of these guys, right? Of all these first round picks, maybe outside of Treylon Burks. But beyond Treylon Burks, I think he has nobody as clearly out ahead of him as anybody else. And to the extent Elijah Moore is ahead of him, he's not as insurmountable despite everything good I said about him. And then, you know, even Corey Davis, fine, as a third option, he's quite cheap. I don't mind adding him in as a double in your stack. But the main point is that you have Zach Wilson, who, despite being really bad last year, look at the other quarterbacks that these other wide receivers went to. Carson Wentz, Jameis Winston, Jared Goff, Marcus Mariota / Desmond Ridder. And am I missing one? Oh, Ryan Tannehill, right? All these other quarterbacks are known quantities, and they're mostly known bad quantities, right? At best, they're known like slightly below average quantities. Zach Wilson, probably not going to be great this year, but if you're telling me that any of these quarterbacks that a first-round wide receiver is drafted to is actually going to be good, I'm definitely placing my chip on Zach Wilson before I would place my chip on a Wentz or a Winston, you know, or one of these guys, something that they've never been before, or a Goff in year seven, right? It's crazy to me. So I just see all these guys having this correlated upside where if each one is just a little bit better than we think they are, then they could all be, you know, three times better than they think they are because they can make each other better. So it's this correlated bet where if any two to me, if like Hall, you know, and Wilson and Moore are both better than expectations, and then you combine that with Wilson being better than expectations, you get a lot of upward momentum. Whereas I feel like a lot of these other wide receiver rooms that people are targeting is either a quarterback we already know is bad, or it's a quarterback that we already know is great, and that's baked into the price, right? But I feel like there's sort of one variable. I like the idea of all of these different variables that are also kind of correlated together. So if Ferris is still in the chat, he'll be thrilled that I'm talking about Zach Wilson because he's like the biggest Zach Wilson stan that I know. But I think that he makes a lot of sense in seasonal leagues to at least be drafting as wide receivers.
I feel like we have been sitting there saying that Zach Wilson was the best buy out of the last year's quarterback class for a while now. I feel like it has been that way for a while. I honestly believe he has the best situation around him outside of Sir Trey Lance. Right? Like he has to. So I agree with that for me. And I believe, Lucas, you got this from DLF.com, Dynasty League Football.
Yes.
DPs. I want the Arizona offense. And I'll tell you why. If Kyler Murray actually supposed to be this elite tier quarterback with quarterback one upside, even though I've been sitting here saying that he is overrated now for 3 years. But if he actually does come through with that, correct? And it's not going to be on the back of 11 rushing touchdowns, which is what his highest performing season was, then I feel like this is the year for him to do that. And part of that is they need him to be. I feel like their defense has gotten worse. There's a bunch of narratives that can tell you that this could be the case. I think their division is worse, right, with Seattle kind of phoning it in and San Francisco kind of being up and down in their secondary. There are some narratives here. There's a path for this. And if you're telling me that Marquise Brown has barely moved up in price going from a piss-poor deep ball passer in Lamar Jackson, sorry, buddy, you know, if anyone's going to talk trash, it's going to be me. So here you go, to one of the best deep ball passers in Kyler Murray. And I'm not even going to lean on the narrative of they played together. Like I don't care about that. They haven't played together as pros. It's not the same thing. So stop it. That's lazy. But what does matter is Marquise Brown's ability to win deep and then Kyler Murray's ability to actually hit him on a deep ball, not throw it 20 yards over his head and out of bounds like Lamar Jackson would do so often. So to get that at wide receiver 26 to me is absolutely insane. And maybe DeAndre Hopkins is done. Maybe he's toast. I know, Jacob, you and I went back and forth on this all of last year. In games that DeAndre Hopkins did not score touchdowns, you did not want to have him in your lineup. He was fucking bad, period, in every way. His routes were bad. His yards per route run, not great. His reception perception wasn't fantastic. He's definitely starting to lose it. However, in the red zone, DeAndre Hopkins was still the fucking man. He was the man. And if Kyler Murray is going to ascend to the next echelon and finally have his QB1 overall season, DeAndre Hopkins is going to have to score a bunch of touchdowns when he comes back from suspension. 6 weeks, DeAndre Hopkins doesn't have to have the work on his legs. That 6 weeks, he gets to come in rested. Add a week or two off for rust. You're getting 8 weeks of DeAndre Hopkins healthy and Arizona needing to push for the playoffs. He's going to have to score a bunch of touchdowns in those games. And he's at wide receiver 45. And then Rondell Moore, drafted pretty highly. Super weird season with his ADOT. Gets the bump from having Christian Kirk departed for an ungodly amount of money over there in Jacksonville, breaking the wide receiver market. Now there's an opportunity for him to be used in a role that isn't at the line of scrimmage, although I still believe Big Cliff is hashtag fake sharp and may not know how to use him. Who knows? However, the opportunity is there for him for at least 6 weeks, and you're getting him basically for free at wide receiver 65. I don't even like putting that into perspective. Tyler Boyd is going as a wide receiver 58, and I would rather have Rondell Moore than Tyler Boyd. So it puts it in perspective opportunity.
I made that exact trade, a Rondell Moore, and I got Tyler Boyd.
Ah, see, there we go. Not scripted. Hashtag not scripted. These guys are essentially free, and I want to attach myself. If Kyler Murray is going to be the dude, he's going to need to do it with his receivers, obviously. And I think they're all priced pretty cheap, and that's not even including Zach Ertz and what he does for this team. So I feel like the weapons are there for Kyler. There's no excuses. If he's QB1, I want his receivers. They're all very reasonably priced. There's not one receiver here that I would say is super overpriced. Maybe DeAndre Hopkins, but if you believe he's coming in to throw touchdowns, or maybe he sucks after steroids. Who knows? Lucas, is there a wide receiver grouping for you that is particularly standing out, or are you just...
Really quick, sorry. You know what I'd love to see them do with Hopkins this year? Can we move him around for God's sake? Like, Cliff Kingsbury has put him on the left boundary wide receiver position on over 80% of his snaps since he came to Arizona. That's the hardest wide receiver position to play because you're getting all the best coverage constantly. You're never getting any favorable matchups. And for prime DeAndre Hopkins, it didn't matter because prime DeAndre Hopkins was a monster. But if we're now getting, you know, mildly declining DeAndre Hopkins, why not? Now that we have Marquise Brown there, we have, you know, AJ Green, who isn't very good, but he can certainly eat up coverage. Why not use AJ Green like a middle reliever who's just out there? You know, you put out your middle reliever to go eat some innings when you need to give the rest of the bullpen a break. Why not put AJ Green out there, freaking left wide receiver? You go eat coverage. You can use, you know, Hollywood Brown at flanker. Why not use Hopkins in the slot a little bit more? Get a little bit more creative with how you use him. In his current state, take advantage of what he still can do well instead of just asking him to go to war predictably at left side wide receiver every single route. It's insane.
Again, I believe that just becomes down to Kingsbury being hashtag fake sharp. But now, again, he has no choice but to mix that offense up. So it'll be very interesting to see. And again, if Kyler Murray is that good, I think everyone's numbers here, I think every one of these receivers is going to be pretty easy for them to outperform their ADP. And I know saying that's like, of course they can out, whatever. I don't care. It's a statement I just made, and I'm living and dying with it. Whatever. Lucas. So,
I want to add something quickly to the Jets, and it's about the article you all were using a lot last week on the show. At the very end, they list...
Ibera, by the way. It's Ibera, not Ibera. So shout out.
At the very end, they listed a stat about year one and rookie wide receivers being paired up on the same team with high draft capital. And in, I think they said the four instances that's happened, it's happened eight times. Four of the times, both of them finished as top 24 wide receivers the next year. And all eight times, at least one's been a top 24 wide receiver, and the other one's been a top 36 wide receiver. It makes the Jets just such an easy smash. And I'm really excited for your best ball teams, Jacob. I'm really excited for you on that. So not as much of a dynasty play here, but I'm really intrigued with the
dynasty show. God damn it.
I know. But with Mike Evans getting older, Russell Gage isn't a spring chicken by any means, but they're just screaming values at wide receiver 22 for Evans, wide receiver 59 for Russell Gage. Neither one of them have been able to see a really high target share recently just based off their situations. And now they're coming in where you're losing all the targets Godwin was commanding, all the targets that Gronk was commanding, all the targets that Antonio Brown was commanding. And they just get to go out there and do their thing with Tom Brady trying to run it back one last time. I am crazy excited, and I'll figure it out next year on my dynasty teams. If I can get them for wide receiver 22 and wide receiver 59 prices, that is the easiest buy I've seen on this wide receiver list, because that's just screaming value. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's interesting because Mike Evans has been a proverbial punching bag on this show and on many shows, because everything just says that he's going to start sucking. Every important metric that man has needed outside of hitting 1,000 yards and scoring 10 touchdowns has been dropping all the time, but yet he continues to do it. And now the football gods have parted the sea for him to come through and eat nothing but targets and touchdowns and red zone opportunities. But I agree with what you said with Russell Gage. I think Russell Gage is a fine pickup. I know, Jacob, the Bulletproof Discord, there was one day where Russell Gage really soaked up the amount of time. God. Maybe we are – I'm going to defer to you on the Russell Gage
I think he's certainly going to finish higher than wide receiver 59. Do I think that he's going to provide like any meaningful value over replacement this year? I don't. I would expect him to finish as like a borderline wide receiver 3. Cool. I think that there's even cheaper options for that. Like I just mentioned in Corey Davis, you could draft Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who might outscore him this year. Like I don't know. I'm not convinced that Russell Gage is going to do anything meaningful. And I would still rather have like a late second round pick and just spin the wheel on a rookie running back than Russell Gage myself. But like, I'm sure he will score fantasy points. I think he was better last year than I thought he was prior to last year, but he was still on a team with virtually no target competition, earning about a 22% target share. Like I think on this offense, especially once Godwin comes back and he's healthy, I would be pretty surprised if he's earning more than 16-17% of the targets.
Sure, but in an offense that quite frequently runs out those three wide receivers, and I mean, Russell Gage is obviously not fucking Antonio Brown, and he's not Chris Godwin, and he's not Mike Evans. However, I think they're going to need him because we see, and I'm going to spin narratives for you, and let's see if I can at all sway you, not using your galaxy brain and having to be forced to buy into narratives, which I know you won't do, but it's going to be fun anyway. Tom Brady is overly annoyed with rookie wide receivers and young guys. We see it in every game where he throws a pass and one of those guys either reach out with one hand or they drop it. And then all of a sudden, Tom Brady is seemingly pointing them to the sideline so they can never enter the game again. Shout out Darden and Johnson. Okay.
Yeah, so they're not going to do anything.
Now he's missing Brown. Now he loses his favorite target in Gronk. Well, Godwin, we don't know. People say week 5, week 6. We don't actually know. We have no idea when he's going to be back. He tore his MCL and his ACL in that knee late in the year. We have no idea what is going to happen for him to come back. And we don't know how he's going to look when he comes back. We're automatically assuming, drafting him as the wide receiver 18, that Chris Godwin on his franchise tag is going to come back in week 5 and week 6 and be a 24%+ target share wide receiver, and we don't know if that's going to be the case, if they're going to limit him, save him for the playoffs late in the year. We don't know. Their wide receiver depth in Tampa is fucking horrendous, and Mike Evans is going to draw a ton of coverage. So let's put the pieces together. Leonard Fournette's not catching 100 passes.
He might.
Rashad White, he's not catching that many passes. He's not catching 65 passes unless Fournette gets hurt, and even still, that's a long shot. Giovanni Bernard is dust. I don't give a shit. Brait sucks. Otten sucks. Darden, returner at best. And Johnson,
the other guys.
No. Not great. Can't even remember his first name off the top of my head.
Tyler Johnson's still on the team?
Tyler Johnson. He's there,
he's
but
still on the team.
Brady yells at him a lot. And so you're left with Russell Gage. And I feel like at his price, I feel like there are worse ways to... I would rather have Russell Gage over Algier. For example, I would rather have Russell Gage. See, that's interesting to me because I would rather have Russell Gage.
To me, like Gage is worth what his production is this year. He will never have a better situation for the rest of his life than he will have in 2022. So he's worth what he's going to produce in 22. And then it's like, what's he going to produce in 2022? He's probably going to score a lot of points in the first 6 weeks where there's no fantasy playoff games, which I don't care about. So like, he's going to score a bunch of points in weeks that don't matter to me. Is he going to score a lot of points in weeks 15, 16, 17 when I'm in my fantasy playoffs? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not like that sold that by week 15, 16, 17, when Godwin's fully back and Evans is there and we know how much to throw the running back, that Gage isn't fourth on the team in targets. And so
if Godwin is fully back,
I mean, I would expect Godwin to be back by week 15. I don't know if it's going to be week 5 or week 10.
Or
week 15, he'll be back. I mean, well, will he be fully back? Will he be peak Godwin? Probably not. You're not usually not in your first year off ACL. Do you think he's going to earn more targets than Russell Gage still? Yeah, I do. So I don't know. I'm not that interested in buying. Like, to me, it's what am I buying? And I'm buying production during the first half of the season that I don't really care about. So I would rather bet on a guy like Algier where I'm expecting nothing, but you know, maybe he rises in value. And to me, I just don't think Gage's production matters enough for me that I would want him over just taking a shot in the dark at a running back, hoping that one day I get to trade him for a first. Like, I would rather just take that shot repeatedly. I would bet pretty strongly that one of Tyler Algier, Zamir White, Brian Robinson, Tyrion Davis Price, I'm missing one, Keontae Ingram, and I might be missing one more. But this whole like group of running backs, I would almost guarantee that one of them is going to be tradable for a first-round pick at some point in Dynasty this year. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't have a clue. I don't know who it's going to be or how it's going to happen. But like, I'm going to be exchanging one of those guys into a first-round pick in 2024 in every single one of my leagues that I have them. Like, that's going to happen. And I would just rather take like the 1-in-5 shot on that versus like Russell Gage.
And you're going to be dropping the rest of them when you can trade Russell Gage for a second round pick midway through a season after he's already helped you win 6 out of your first 8 games.
That's a second round pick. Then it's another guy that I'm trying to trade into a first. I want to skip the step.
But you win 6 of your first 8 games.
You know how like few games are decided by whatever delta you're going to get between Russell Gage's wide receiver 3 production and the wide receiver 4? Like, he's going to be producing like he's going to be producing 2 points above replacement at best in the weeks that he's playing. And then how often are your games decided by 2 points? Like, at most, he's maybe going to buy you one win. Like, I don't understand the fascination with any of these guys like a Russell Gage. Like, I'm just never paying for production at wide receiver unless it's wide receiver 1 production. If I'm buying a wide receiver, it's either the elite production that's getting me actual value over replacement, or if I'm swimming in these streets, I'm just doing it for VORP. Like, Tyler Boyd is going to produce the same amount as Russell Gage this year. I could buy Tyler Boyd like way cheaper than Russell Gage because it's not like, oh, Brady. Like, and then Tyler Boyd's actually good. So he might actually start for another team at some point in time. My lights automatically shut off at this time of night, apparently. So
I keep thinking they're trying to lock you in. Well, look, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and with the off season being what it is, you look very dark and ominous right now. This is some very dark night vibes I'm getting from you right now, just for the record. We're going to have so much time to talk about wide receivers in this off season because the off season is just popping with potential. We're at about 54 minutes. So we have one more bit that we've promised the people. We're going to get to that right away. We're going to take a quick second. We're going to change how things look. And when we come back, Jacob and I are going to do battle about AJ Brown. I had a bunch of gimmicks ready for this, a bunch of audio. I can't have those weapons. So I'm going to have to thoroughly just accept defeat and try to talk my way through this. It's going to be futile. But we're going to see when we come back. We're playing People, VRTDB, first time in a long time. Sit back and enjoy. Here's another clip from one of our previous shows. We come back, we're going to be ready for you.
I approach my work from the standpoint of like answering questions, right? So I'll ask a question. I'll go research that question, try to find an answer. Sometimes I don't find an answer. And I think a lot of times that, you know, there are people within the space who go search that answer. They don't find an answer, but they just spend a lot of time trying to find that answer. So they just kind of force it, right? And they just create these narratives and build these studies around something where there's not really an answer, but they just did so much work that they feel like they need to publish something. And so, you know, I think that you have to feel okay, you know, with spending time trying to discover something and it not being anything. It's happened You know, it happens all the time to me. So just use that curiosity and try to answer those questions.
Absolutely legendary that we had the that we had the opportunity to have JJ Zacharyson, which you need to go
figure
and
out
watch.
The best lighting here.
Oh my gosh,
it's a little better. It's a little better. This is why we actually have to start and finish on time. If I ever record at the office going forward, I forgot what time exactly it was, but I have this happen to be every time I work late, where I'm like in the middle of writing something, and then the lights go off. But this is how the planet gets saved.
Absolutely phenomenal. We have some new people in the chat. Be sure to talk about what a value Skylar Thompson is.
Oh my god, Paradox. Paradox, dude. No. somewhere we're gonna see, you know what we're gonna see out of Paradox one day is it's gonna be an obituary, and it's gonna say two men dead from jumping off bridge, and it's gonna say Matt Waldman jumped first and Paradox decided he should too.
Oh my God, harsh, harsh. So as you can see by the little setup, we have the Court of Fantasy Opinion here for the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast. It's usually me down at the bottom as judge, jury, and executioner in this, but today it's a little bit different. Let me run it down for those of you who may not have seen. As you can see, we have Judge Judith Scheinlin hanging out with us at the bottom, my favorite judge of all time. So she's chilling there. She's going to help Lucas make a final decision. He, of course, is the paragon of objectivity in this case. He is going to cut it straight. Unfortunately, usually people could win if they talked up the Baltimore Ravens, like gave them a bonus point and was able to sway my decision. However, not the case today, and I refuse to talk up Jerry Judy. So shove it, Lucas. This is how it's going to go. We're going to have some opening statements. We're going to have some back and forth. We're going to get this thing kicked off. Lucas, explain what we have going on today. You are the judge. The court is now yours.
All right. So, yes, it is the people versus RTDB, and we are going to be discussing A.J. Brown this offseason. He is currently going as a wide receiver 6 off the board in your dynasty startup drafts. But Thomas doesn't really feel that way now, do you?
Oh, well, look, ladies and gentlemen of the court, I just want to open this with very few times in our history do you have the opportunity to make positive change in your life. And I feel like that opportunity presents itself today with you skipping over AJ Brown as your dynasty wide receiver 3. My counterpart in the courtroom today believes that this wide receiver that fails to get peppered with enough targets to return on his investment and only has 1 year inside the top 12 in points per game. And he did it on outrageous efficiency, as a little sneak peek in what we're going to have here, can somehow return the value of wide receiver 3 in your dynasty league, regardless of the fact that he's going to turn 25 in season, actually right away at 24.9 years old. He's already getting old and his body is already breaking down. Ladies and gentlemen of the court, I find it egregious that Jacob Sanderson refuses to change his ways and he is still touting the AJ Brown propaganda to you in written form, in podcast form, and I believe it is completely outrageous.
Ooh, fairly strong to start off. Jacob, your opening statement, please.
Well, I first want to preface this with two limitations on my argument and the extent of that argument. And the first is that Tom has the world's easiest job. If he doesn't win this case, it would be the worst calamity in legal work in this AJ case since the OJ case, quite frankly, because all he has to do is convince you that any other possible member of the field is better than AJ Brown at wide receiver 3. What an unbelievably easy task that Tom has set out for himself. It's almost like he comes up with these segments. The second is that, as we already mentioned, I always want to trade back. Do I want to sit there and take AJ Brown as my wide receiver 3, or do I want to move back and take the wide receiver 15? Of course I want to do that. But today, that is not the options that we get to discuss. We don't have options of trade backs. We don't have options of sorting out the value. We do not get to be cowards on the show. You have to sit there like a man and pick. You have to sit at your pick and make a selection. And if I have to take a wide receiver, and I'm sitting there and Chase Jefferson on the board, the option for me is clear. And the option is that I have to take AJ Brown, because when you look at all the different elements that make up a wide receiver's dynasty value, we look at their peripheral production, their ability to earn targets, the ability to be efficient on those targets. You look at their years of experience remaining. You look at their youth. You look at also their surroundings. Do they have a situation that can ultimately benefit them as a high-end fantasy producer? To me, AJ Brown ultimately is the only one who checks all of those boxes, because the other wide receivers around him either have not yet shown the level of elite target earning ability that AJ Brown has shown on his routes, or they're past the age cliff, or they just have not shown the ability of any form of a ceiling, such as CeeDee Lamb or T. Higgins. And so that's ultimately where I come down, is that AJ Brown perfectly blends the age, the situation, and the previous production. He just needs the health.
Well put. Thomas, rebuttal.
Okay, that was a very fancy way of saying AJ Brown maybe will be good one day. And I got to give my credit to Jacob Sanderson. He's a very smart individual. He does this for a living. You know what I do for a living? I help the people. And there is nowhere for Jacob Sanderson to go in this argument. He cannot rely on his at cost. The words that Jacob Sanderson have used in the past is that AJ Brown is, has been, and will be his dynasty wide receiver three. And you know what that's doing? That's creating a false narrative that AJ Brown actually has the opportunity to hit that. Who are the number one and two wide receivers, you might ask? Great question. Phenomenal question. You know who that is? My team is giving me the info. Okay, we have right here. I'm sorry, Your Honor. My team has just brought me a new document here. The number one wide receivers in Dynasty, number one and two. That's Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. Phenomenal wide receivers that have already had their targets above A.J. Brown's career high in targets. And what happened to AJ Brown? He got yeeted to another team in the Philadelphia Eagles this year. It's not even the same scenario. He is going to a less efficient quarterback. He is going from Ryan Tannehill, pocket passer, white chocolate extraordinaire, completely capable of targeting AJ Brown consistently. And what does he have to deal with now? Jalen Hurts, one of the least efficient quarterbacks in the NFL last year. True passer rating of number 29. That's not going to be great for AJ Brown. He does not do well under pressure. Well, guess what? The Philadelphia Eagles have lost offensive linemen to retirement. Not going to do well for Jalen Hurts in that regard. What does that mean? He's going to have to take off and run. And you know what? Funny enough, the running mates that AJ Brown now has to deal with in Philadelphia are outstandingly better. Corey Davis. Okay. We're going to have ghost of Julio Jones. RIP. Respect to Julio Jones. But he was
that haunts every one of Todd's teams.
Absolute dust. Yeah. And it showed in the results. And what was AJ Brown able to do under these circumstances? Well, let's talk about that. Wide receiver 24 in points per game. Okay, and I understand he only played in 13 games. I get it. He didn't even really play in all of those 13 games. The man left games on a regular basis because he's already busted and broken. Wide receiver 30 in his rookie year, and he was wide receiver 6. I'll give him credit where credit is due. In the phenomenal season, hyper-efficient, 11 touchdowns on only 70 receptions. People of the court, that's not normal. And that's not sustainable. And you need more out of your dynasty wide receiver 3 than 11 touchdowns on 7 receptions. You need consistency and the ability to maintain production. And AJ Brown has not shown that in the course of his career.
Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a simple fantasy football judge here. But I'm fairly certain that any new evidence needs to be presented before
the case it was is there. Heard. No, it was there. It's on your desk, sir. your assistants must not have done that.
Oh, my apologies. Jacob?
Well, I am so glad that Tom, despite having the entire field of wide receivers to choose from to knock out AJ Brown from his wide receiver 3 post, focused on talking about the only two wide receivers that I've already agreed should be ranked ahead of him. What an absolute mess in lawyering skills a blatant missed opportunity to even bring up Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase, who the entire court and the defense already agrees and has put into evidence that, in fact, they are the dynasty wide receiver one and wide receiver two ahead of A.J. Brown. However,
in leading.
Leading what? Who's the witness?
Dismiss.
Leading this debate, perhaps. Now, here, I want to talk about a stat. Here's a stat that people like. Yeah, yards per route run, right? Why do we like the stat? We like the stat because it shows it a blend of efficiency on targets and the ability to earn targets, the two major ingredients of what makes a wide receiver. Notice what's not even a part of the stat is the touchdowns that Tom keeps talking about. Oh, it's only propped up by touchdowns. Here are the top five wide receivers in yards per route run in 2019. Stephon Diggs, Julio Jones, Devontae Adams, Michael Thomas, A.J. Brown. Okay, how about 2020? Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams, A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, Julio Jones. Okay, how about 2021? Cooper Kupp, A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, Devontae Adams, Deebo Samuel. What did all these lists have in common? Well, the one thing that they all have in common, the only thing that they all have in common, is that there are only two players that appear in the top five in all 3 years. That's Devontae Adams and A.J. Brown. Another thing that they have in common, 9 of the 15 players on that list had a top five wide receiver points per game season in that year. The only six that aren't included, of course, are all three of A.J. Brown's seasons. Julio Jones's 2020 campaign when he was playing a lot of partial games in and out with a hamstring injury. Stephon Diggs is in 2019, which, of course, foretold his breakout a year later. And then the only other one on the list is Julio Jones once again in 2020. So we have Julio and A.J. and then Stephon Diggs. They're the only ones that are showing up not in that top five. Then you add that to the fact that, okay, what's he doing with his targets? Oh, he doesn't get a lot of targets. Why doesn't he get a lot of targets? Well, half the reason he doesn't get a lot of targets because, as Todd said, occasionally he gets the soft tissue injuries, act up in the first quarter, all of a sudden he's not playing for the rest of the game. But unlike Tom, you know, who's out here trying to predict injuries, I'm looking at the routes that he ran. There's only one player who earned more targets on his routes last year. In 2021, on at least a minimum of 200 routes, that's Devontae Adams. A.J. Brown earned a target on a higher percentage of his routes than Justin Jefferson, on a higher percentage of his routes than Cooper Kupp. Every single part of this guy's profile puts him in a clear tier with Cooper Kupp, Devontae Adams, Ja'Marr Chase, Deebo Samuel, Justin Jefferson. That's the group that he's attracting in targets per route run, in yards per route run, in PFF receiving grades, and basically all of the ways that we can measure outside of fantasy points. That's the group that he's in. He's the only one that has not been able to translate that into fantasy points because his team refused to pass the football and because of health. We don't know what's going to happen with his health. We can't predict what's going to happen with his or anybody else's health. I remember when DeAndre Hopkins was indestructible. Michael Thomas didn't miss a game until he did. Julio Jones didn't miss games until he did. Keenan Allen was injury prone until he wasn't. We don't know what's going to happen with health. And now we go to Philadelphia. We don't know what's going to happen with Philadelphia. It's an uncertain situation, but we do know this. No team had a higher pass rate over expectation for the first 6 weeks of the season than the Philadelphia Eagles. Over the time that Howie Roseman has been in charge of that organization, they have finished outside of the top 10 in pass rate just twice. Carson Wentz's first full year as a starter, and now Jalen Hurts' first full year of a starter. This is not a team that wants to be a run-first identity like Tennessee does. Their running back room is Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, and Kennedy Brooks. Also Kenny Gainwell, drafted after a kicker. No Derrick Henry is on this roster. He is not walking through that door. This team wants to be pass first. They've shown that with their actions. They showed that with their actions again when they went out and traded a first-round pick, a third-round pick, and $100 million to A.J. Brown. And so this is an opportunity now for A.J. Brown to finally be in a forward-thinking offense with the godfather of his child throwing him the football, and has the opportunity to finally translate these metrics, which show him clearly an elite tier, into production. After the bets of Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, it's clear you want to go with A.J. Brown.
What my opponent, my fellow fantasy football lawyer has done a great job of is tell you what might happen in a magical land we like to call make-believe. And it is that all of a sudden, the Philadelphia Eagles will realize that not only did they struggle in the first 6 weeks of the season as a team, they made the playoffs on the back of running the football. And these sort of things don't change. I understand that, yes, they traded a first-round pick and another draft pick, and they paid them a ton of money to join the Philadelphia Eagles. But what that's going to do is open the field up for players like former first round pick, not second round pick, Devonta Smith, and newly minted Dallas Goedert. It's going to open the field up for them for more targets. The target competition is more fierce and it is meaner. And though Derrick Henry may not be walking through the doors in Philadelphia, they are still going to run the damn ball up and down the field in between the 20s, and that's what they want to do. Jalen Hurts has not shown the ability to consistently throw touchdown passes, which is where A.J. Brown has made his money, as I had mentioned in my previous argument. Now, Jacob also wanted to point out that I did mention the top receivers in the league in Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. However, cases can be made for many other players to be sitting atop that wide receiver three spot. And I'm going to run some down for you. It's Cooper Kupp. He's 29 years old, but you know what that man's going to do? He's going to dominate for the next 3 years. What's A.J. Brown going to do for the next 3 years? Miss a bunch of games, need to be hyper-efficient, and fail to reach targets. A.J. Brown has been out-targeted by players like Brandon Cooks, Mike Williams, DK Metcalf. These are not elite players. Jacoby Myers found a way to out-target A.J. Brown. That is concerning and will remain concerning until we see it. Fantasy football is a fantastic game. It is absolutely phenomenal if you can find yourself an edge. But taking somebody like Jacob Sanderson's word, a man who went against his own beliefs and drafted Mac Jones in the fifth round, taking this man's word at white on what might happen in the future, maybe, that's not what you should be doing. What you should be doing is taking proven results at that wide receiver three position. Players who had not only have the draft capital, better opportunity, more targets in their career. Players like, I don't know, CeeDee Lamb, who is the rightful wide receiver three in Dynasty Fantasy Football. Ladies and gentlemen of the court, I'm going to rest my case on this. A.J. Brown looks really good in Dolce & Gabbana sunglasses. He looks phenomenal on all the Jacob Sanderson Twitter banners. And hell, he looks great breaking a bunch of tackles. But what A.J. Brown is a wannabe Deebo Samuel in a situation that is not going to provide him the opportunity to garner the necessary targets, the receptions needed to return value as your dynasty wide receiver three. Therefore, he should be comfortably sitting outside of your top five without question. Your Honor, prosecution rests.
Jacob, closing arguments. That was strong.
Well, I'm glad that Tom finally brought up, you know, any of the other options that he could bring up instead of A.J. Brown. I was worried that he was simply going to leave them off the evidence docket entirely. But while Tom did bring up finally some other wide receivers like CeeDee Lamb and Cooper Kupp, that wasn't the only things that he brought up that had nothing to do with A.J. Brown himself, because his entire case rests on nothing to do with A.J. Brown himself, because it is impossible when looking at any sort of stats that A.J. Brown has any control over, such as when does he earn targets on his routes? How does he gain yards on those routes? How does he score touchdowns on his targets or anything else that he's ever done on a football field? There is literally not a single stat that you can pull that actually looks at A.J. Brown on a component of the offense that he plays in that can possibly justify him as anything but one of the elite wide receivers in the league, in which the only players that compare to him are Cooper Kupp, who's 29, Devontae Adams, who's 29, and Justin Jefferson, who is already ranked ahead of him, and perhaps maybe Stephon Diggs, who is 28 years old. Tom's entire argument instead rests on things that have nothing to do with A.J. Brown and that are outside of his control. Like his strident belief that the Philadelphia Eagles will continue to be a run-first team despite everything that they've been as an organization over the last 10-plus years. His strident belief that A.J. Brown's hamstrings will continue to hamstring your dynasty team despite the known volatility of injuries. And so instead of focusing on the stats which are stickiest from year to year, the ability to earn targets and the ability to produce on your targets, he's instead decided to do things that have nothing to do with the player and that are extremely volatile year to year, such as health and team passing volume. Instead, we can focus on the talent. Instead of projecting CeeDee Lamb's talent, instead of hoping for Cooper Kupp's injury luck never, or to age luck to never run out and for him to never draw a black marble, We can position ourselves with an asset that is uniquely positioned to not depreciate, because the talent is locked in and the only thing that is a question mark is what is around him. So ultimately, your decision when it comes to AJ Brown and these options is, do you wish to focus your player selection on the player or on everything to do with the things that the player cannot control? Your Honor, I hope that in your decision of selecting a player, you choose to focus on the player rather than the razzle and the dazzle and the groin and the ribs. And I rest my case.
Wow. Oh my goodness. This is tough to decide on. First of all, I'm going to demand silence in my courtroom. I see what the chat is doing, trying to persuade me. But unfortunately, this will be my last show on here because I have to side with Jacob. So I'm going to go ahead and start packing my resume because I know Tom's firing me immediately. But I think really what got me was the per route stats that Jacob was throwing
at. Oh my.
Tom, your biggest flaw in your argument was the targets and then bringing up other players who are having more passing options and getting targets. You didn't say anything comparing how he was getting those targets compared to the other players that you brought up. And that, in my opinion, was the biggest deciding factor.
No, this is completely outrageous. This is preposterous. Well, we'll be filing an appeal. The prosecution did everything in their power to point out how absolutely insane it is that we are basing this completely on maybes and what ifs, considering he's never managed to do it. Fine. You are so fucking fired.
I knew it. I knew it.
Contempt of court.
The chat knows I've been robbed. I'm ready to hear what's at stake.
Oh, and what's at stake? The court sides with Jacob Sanderson in the case of AJ Brown and awards them the right to choose what team name the other, Mr. Thomas Tipple, must use in any league from now until week one of the preseason.
This is absolutely brutal.
Wait, okay, what's this? I get to pick a name for him to use on this show?
No, in any league from now
until week any one league.
One league. One team, you get to pick the name.
Okay, it's going to be Dolce My Banana.
Oh, no. Well, you hear it here first. He's going to have to pick a league where my name is Dolce and Banana. Unbelievable.
No, Dolce My Banana. Oh
my God, that's worse. That's slanderous. This is horrific. I'm embarrassed. Lucas is fired. We need a new producer.
That was zero prep work. I did not know what the punishment was going to be.
Oh my God.
That's going to be a clip for sure. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to Photoshop together the picture of AJ Brown with the Dolce sunglasses with like a big banana coming out of both sides. And we'll get this ready for you. It's going to be great. I got
absolutely robbed and hosed. We're apparently ranking our wide receivers based on what might happen in the land of make-believe. But I don't, oh my God, this is brutal. Okay, so I guess we're going to have to make a bet now. We're going to do this next week. We're going to make a bet now for finishes because I feel like I need to defend myself a little bit more. The appeal is going to be rigorous and the process is you'll be just under paperwork from now. You'll be tied up 100%. Guys, final thoughts as we get out of here. I want to start with you, Jacob.
I'm just so happy that the people that we may not be able to have trust, unfortunately, in ADP. We may not be able to have trust in my co-host, Thomas Tipple. We may not be able to have trust in soft tissue, but we can have trust in the legal system. That only in the legal system, the justice is served. AJ Brown, wide receiver 3 in Dynasty. Check out my recently released Best Ball Strategy Series, part 1 of my Best Ball Strategy Series is up. Toronto Dave with the comment of the night, evidence for Lamb is all circumstantial. That is so true. And yeah, check out me out on Twitter, FF_RTDB. And for all things best ball or dynasty, I'll be in the Bulletproof Discord. I'll be in the Full Tilt Discord. So feel free to join us there. And yeah, what do you got going on, Tom?
Well, I want to get Lucas's final thoughts. This is your first show on the flagship. I think you did a phenomenal job. I mean, we do miss Billy, but if there was going to be a fill-in, I'm glad it was you, even though your ruling was absolute bullshit. We're going to have many conversations about this, but final thoughts on today's show.
Oh, man, it was just so much fun. I remember the first show that you all did, the People versus RTDB, and I was like, man, I can't believe Thomas always sides with Jacob. This seems so rigged. But then to get to sit in this chair and see what the arguments are actually alike. And apparently yards per route run is a theoretical stat that doesn't actually happen. Fair enough.
He perjured himself as judge. All right. We have. Oh my God.
Oh, that's awesome. But it was just so much fun to be able to sit here and do this with you all. I love the debate. I am going to have to stop sending out the link for this show, though, because I can't let the people in my league see what we're talking about here. All right. We're going to take away every slight advantage I have because I hear this stuff before they do. So, but it was so much fun. Thank you all so much for having me on. I look forward to being on here next week in the producers area. So much fun.
Absolutely phenomenal. And look, the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast, we're a growing group. We started out as three people that met completely at random, and here we are. We're growing, and we couldn't do it without everyone else. Reminder, Thursday, the Full Tilt Devi podcast is live with myself and Andy Starr. Saturday, Fantasy Walkabout, me and myself. Jesus Christ, I'm so at a loss right now. I can't believe that verdict went that way. Yeah, myself, Lucas, and Tom Lee, all the way from the other side of the world in Australia, will be doing the Fantasy Walkabout, maybe even a cash consideration. We'll see how it goes. Other than that, the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast YouTube page is growing. We need you all to head over there and subscribe. Hit the notification bell. Leave some comments. Tell us that our shirts are dirty. I don't care what you say. Just leave it. It helps with the algorithm. If you haven't already, go and leave a review over on iTunes and or Spotify or wherever else you're getting this show. And again, tell us that our hats look shitty. Patrick needs to start doing his job. Patrick, the HR alpaca, whatever you want to tell us. I don't really care. It just helps with the algorithm and helps us move up the charts. And of course, I want to remind everyone to be a good person, be kind to one another on the internet, unless it's people who are out there drafting Mac Jones in the fifth round. Shout out Jacob. Remember that clear eyes and full hearts can never lose in your best days. Well, goddamn, everybody. They're always meant tilting. Good night.